Okay, one of the more cliched concepts in religion is that religion attempts to fuse the spiritual and the physical. That's true of any religious person. Your physical body, you possess an immortal soul. By definition, you're going to have to find some resolution and distillation of the two. So the question becomes not just addressing our relation between spiritual and physical, but subdividing that into different categories. So, for example, how do you view your body? Do you dichotomize body and soul? Body is just some bag of bones housing your soul, and your soul is the real religious center? Or do you fuse the two and create one integrated entity of religious experience as well as physical experience? How do you view this world? Is this world just some temporary sideshow to the real world, which is the palace? Or given the fact that the real world of the palace awaits us and this is just the entry point, we still want to engage ourselves in this world. How do you view physical experiences? Are physical experiences simply to be engaged in at a minimal level, or is there meaning and religious opportunity through physical experiences? So just to say my religion is about fusing physical and spiritual is just getting by with a phrase. You want to get down to, well, in what area do I try to struggle between those two aspects of my life? Rav Amital spent a lot of time, maybe close the door, Adam. Rav Amital spent a lot of time discussing the interaction between humanism and our human selves and our religious selves and our religious nature. And I want to deliver, hopefully, a series of three shiurim beginning tonight, which will address different aspects of that question rather than just in mass. Tonight, because it's a week after the Akedah and I wasn't here last week, so it's a week after Parshas Vayera, I want to show you how he revolutionized the Akedah. How he took a narrative, one of the great moments of Jewish history, and he, through sensitivity to Chazal, basically redrew the entire landscape. The message of the Akedah, the message, the baseline, and he's not in any way looking to obscure that message, but to complement it with another message, is that the Akedah represents the litmus test of orthodoxy. We try to synchronize Hashem's will with our will. We try to see them as consistent. We try to see religion as ennobling and enriching and meaningful and content-driven and full of value and purpose. But ultimately, we all reach that dead end. We just can't understand our Kodesh Baruch Hu's expectations. It's the Akedah moment. It's the Amalek moment. Obviously, those are very dramatic, national, historic, but we reach it in our own lives. And when faced with the clash that seems irreconcilable between Hashem's expectation and Hashem's divine command and human interests and human impulses and human morality, we submit human morality to divine will. That is the litmus test of orthodoxy. That's the litmus test of Avodas Hashem. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram, Ata yadati ki yirei Elokim ata. Now I know. You've proven to me that you can synchronize my will with your will. You've demonstrated to the world that religion is not meant to suppress, punish, annihilate man like people thought before you, because that's all they saw, floods and expulsions and punishments. You've demonstrated to the world that religion is married to progress and human welfare. You've demonstrated to the world that you're not just a philosopher, but you're a moral agent. You've led to the improvement of the human condition, because that's the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have proven to the world you're an Ohev of Hashem, and Avram is the only person in Tanakh called an Ohev of Hashem, Zer Avram Ohavi and Yirmiyah. So you've proven you're Avas Hashem. Now prove the other side of the equation. Can you serve me when it makes no sense, and not just because it can't make sense, but it shouldn't make sense, because it would be monstrous for a human being to justify murder of your child. So can you serve me when you just can't understand me? Oh, Ata Yadati Ki Yirei Elokim Ata. Avram is the only person in Tanakh to be called an Ohev Hashem, and the only person in Tanakh to be called Yirei Shemayim. Tanakh describes Yirei Shemayim, self to Rakal Nishma, Vata Yisrael Masha Lokach Hashem Meimach, Kim Lira, Rechach Meiras Hashem, but he's the only one to be called Ki Yirei Elokim Ata, Zer Avram Ohavi. So he complements the two components of religious consciousness. You try to understand Hashem's will, and your final lesson is, you, if you think you know him, you don't know him. You only know him if you know you don't know him. Because then you know you know him. Because then you don't know him. You know you can't know him. If you think you know him, you're paganizing and humanizing Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the Akedah. So we'd expect the Akedah to be populated, the stage of the Akedah to be populated by people who have emptied their humanity, who have robotized and lobotomized themselves. Basically have emptied and divested any human morality, any human instinct, banished, sidelined it, antenna up, take me to your leader, worshiping whatever Kodesh Baruch Hu commands. Rav Amital showed us this is a second story. And Chazal were unwilling to relinquish and to forfeit the humanity of the people on stage at Har Moriah. And they constantly breathed human feelings and human persona into these people, because the message is that, listen carefully, practically, there's no solution. There's no flexibility. You follow Hashem's will, but you do it as a human being. And we'll see how they breathe and what their message was. And how Rav Amital filled and created a composite rather than a monochromatic version of this story with black and white robots serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and succumbing to his will. So first of all, let's look at source number one. Come on, this is the Tanakh class. Chaim, help us out. What is the Milah Mancha of the Akedah? I gave you a little hint. What's the Milah Mancha? Kachnas bincha, es Yitzchak bino, Yitzchak bino, hineni bini, leola bini. If you asked me to perform the Akedah, the easiest way to succeed is to dehumanize the subject, is to objectify Yitzchak. Now you see what happens, unfortunately, in a world in which people become objectified, but people want to be manipulative and ignore Tzelem Elohim in respect for human beings. It's the easy way to do it, look at them as objects. So if you're looking for the most successful route to the Akedah, and to a degree, when we're in war, to a degree, you have to objectify the enemy. Because if you're too in touch with the humanity of the enemy, it'd be harder for you to conquer the enemy. So if you're looking for the strategy that yields the greatest chance of success, it's that Avram should no longer see his son as a child. And he shouldn't see himself as a father. They should lobotomize themselves, empty their emotions, and succeed almost in some trance-like, drugged state where I'm not a father, you're not a child, Allah Akbar. I just have to accomplish the goal to get to my objective. And they're not. This is a story of a father who refuses love for his child and a child that sees his father. They walk hand in hand. There aren't too many scenes like this in Sefer Bereishis of parents and children walking hand in hand, let alone a roll of Tanakh. This is a portrait. This is a moment. Avram excels as a father. And he talks to his child as a child. So the words themselves, before we see Chazal, are yelling at us. These are children and parents, not objects and robots. And then the game, the tease. Kachna es bincha, es yichidcha, asher ahavta, es yitzchak. And what does Rashi tell us? Avram says, they're both my children. He says, no, the one you love. Love them both. Second line, second source. No, the unique one. Avram says, they're both unique to their respective mothers. This is a game. Hashem is withholding the information just to tease Avram, and Avram playing, okay, battleship. I'll move my battleship. You move your destroyer. This is like a game of chess. I don't know. You don't. Rav Amital felt, first of all, from Avram's perspective, amazingly, he's not toying with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He sincerely hopes that Yishmael can be reconstituted. Maybe there is a historical role for Yishmael. He doesn't know what this journey's about in the beginning of the Pasuk. Hashem says, take your child. So as far as he's concerned, he's taking his child somewhere to create history. And even though Yishmael's been discarded, and he's been discharged, and he's the unchosen one, he carries Avram's DNA. He's his child. And Avram, as a father, says, why not? I know Yitzchak Yikar L'Chazara, but let's give Yishmael a role. When Avram says, maybe it's Yishmael, he's my son also, and I love him also, and he's unique. He's not just playing a game, a dance, a charade with a Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is a father who's standing on Har Moriah, who protects and is protective and loving and caring about his children, even the ones who have been, so to speak, sidelined or rendered secondary. So this is Avram showing us that he's a real-life father who cares about a child, even though ideologically that child, at least at this point, has been marginalized. And from Hashem's standpoint, he's trying to evoke in Avram fatherly love by playing this, being, so to speak, coy, demure. Kachnas bincha. I love them both. Es yichidcha. They're both unique. Asher hafta. Now that you feel this love, I want that love to be part of this process. I want that love to infuse the process. You're meant to be a father who loves his child, and we'll see the role for that love coming not just as an abstract function, but playing a really important role in the Akedah. And that's the great reveal at the end of this year. Get ready for the great reveal. Okay. So now we have the setup. Fathers and children ascending the mountain. Fathers loving children, not objectifying children into objects, so that the deed can be done. Remember the Medrash you read when you were a child about the Satan trying to thwart Avraham and prevent him from ascending Har HaMoriah and thwarting Yitzchak? Well, the most important thing you can do is update the things you learned when you were 7 now that you're 18 or 19. You can't read them like you're 7 years old anymore. So let's read the Medrash and see how amazingly Rav Amital delivered an incredibly postmodern read of this Medrash. Modern, postmodern, but incredibly modernized read of this Medrash. So take a look at source number 6 on the back of the first page. The Satan comes kidmus zakein, line 2. He appears to Avram like an older person. I'm like, Lana Taholech, where are you going? Sounds like Akavya ben Malala. Lana Taholech, Me'ayin Basa, Lana Taholech. He quotes Akavya ben Malala, Lana Taholech. So Avram just tries to pass him off. He says, I'm going to study some Torah. I'm going to daven, he says. I'm just paraphrasing. You can read it on your own. Amar Leis, so the Satan says, you're going to daven. I've seen people go to shul, they don't carry wood, fire, and knives. Avram says, well, stay a few days. May have to make a cookout. You know, may have to make a little poike or something, a little chutz. So we got some wood, we got a knife. We need it. Satan says, wait a second. Okay. I know where you're going. I heard, Kachas Bincha, line number 5, Zakein Kemoscha, you old man. Yelech v'yabe ben shenitin lecha l'meh ashana. You're going to forfeit something you've waited for 100 years, about which you have a divine promise? Haven't you heard the popular metaphor that first protect what's yours before you try to accomplish more, and you're just throwing away what you've already accomplished? And Avram vanquishes this Satan, and he's unstoppable. So now the Satan tries his luck on Yitzchak, and he appears to Yitzchak like a young man, Yitzchak's age. V'nid mele bachar. Second paragraph, source 6. Says, where are you going? Lana Taholech. Amalei, line 2, second paragraph, source 6. I'm going to study some Torah. Amalei, here. How are you going to study Torah when you're dead? And then he starts playing on Yitzchak's fears. He says, line number 3, Aluv bar aluva, you're so sad, you're so pathetic. Kama tanios nesnani simecha. Now he starts invoking his mother. Your mother fasted years for you. She would fast every week just to merit a child. And you're tossing it all away. And not only that, your father, you see that man over there with the knife? He's a little senile. He's a little demented. He's going off the reservation a little bit. He's on a killing spree. And Yitzchak says, I'm going. I'm not afo pikein, lo evar al das yotzri. I'm not going to violate Hashem's will, bel das avi. So when we were young, we thought these were real conversations. Satan talking to Avram. And they may have been. And I felt, incredibly, this is not real conversations. This is the Medrash recording Avram and Yitzchak's inner struggle, inner turmoil. Their inner voices, they're struggling. And when Avram struggles, his other voice appears to him, as an older man. Right? When I struggle, and I think about the different options, what I should do, I struggle. I'm 51 years old. I don't imagine I'm struggling between myself and a 17-year-old. Struggling the two sides of me. What should I do? And Yitzchak imagines his inner voice and his inner turmoil, his inner doubt, as a 37-year-old. Because that's how old he is at the Akeda. This is psychological. This is the Medrash giving us a glance into the psychological landscape of these two people who are really struggling with Devar Hashem. Rav Aaron said at a different level, why do you think Hashem wanted them to walk 3 days' journey to Har Moriah? Because you should think that it was Avram responding impulsively in some trance-like state, taking a drug, hallucinatory agent, and saying, I'm doing it. He's 3 days. He sleeps on it. He travels. He mulls it over. And according to this Medrash, he actually struggles. What do you mean it's the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? History. Akedas Yitzchak. You're the hero. Parshas Vayera. It just doesn't make sense. And this is so important for postmodern boys your age and girls to hear. Religion doesn't mean you don't have doubt. It means you live with doubt. And you find a comfort zone to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with your questions. We're living in a world in which the certainties of life and the absolute truths and the absolute dogmas, that's not the way you were raised. And you have to understand, if you're looking for religion, especially in your reality, to conform to those absolutisms, it's not. I have doubts. Quite frankly, the older you get, the more you have doubts. The more you see, the more you have doubts. You're living with doubt. And learning to navigate your way with doubt, carrying on your shoulders, because you have people, in my opinion, you have people that just impress you and connect you to something larger, and they live with doubt also. And they can, I can. Having shoulders large enough. What an incredible image. What an incredible image of Avram and Yitzchak. Human beings who are railing against the presumed moral impossibility of what Hashem asks them to do, but they're never going to flinch at the point of decision. So you see Chazal are constantly trying to humanize them rather than objectify them. Okay, so now we've traveled on the journey. we've made it up to Har Moriah. After all the days of doubt and all the inner turmoil and all the description, now they're on the Akedah. They're literally on the Mizbeach. Guys, I think I told this to you. If I didn't, it's really important. What does the word Akud really mean? What does the Sharesh Ayin Kuf Dalet really mean? Doesn't mean tied. Any grammatists or grammarians? Ayin Kuf Dalet. Where else in Sefer Bereishis does it appear? Akudim Nikudim Tlavim. What were the sheep? Spotted. Why does Akedah come from the word spotted? Well, if you tie me up this way, with my hands and legs tied, you haven't immobilized me. You've just... a little hard to get around, but I'm still mobile and attacked on it. Yitzchak was hogtied. Hands to feet, to ankles. That creates reverse tension. Hands are pulling one way, feet are pulling another way. The reverse tension creates lacerations. Dots. First we say Yitzchak was hogtied. The Ibn Ezra, I forget which from Mefarish. Why is it important? Again, for us, it's a very, very negative, ugly association with people who exploit others. And basically, at a physical, what we're looking at, you're dehumanizing Yitzchak, because what makes us human is our mobility and our capability with hands. And you're simply, if you tie me like this, you're not eliminating my hands and feet. You're just severely limiting. Here, I've got no hands and feet. Basically, I'm a torso and a head. So in terms of what Shibud is meant to be, I'm an Eved Hashem, this week's Parsha. So there's Yitzchak in your think. He's been completely immobilized, dehumanized, amputated, so to speak, just to use terms to create what's really happening. So what's he thinking? Oh, I'm thinking of Shamayim, Gan Eden, holy... Look at this dark part. I apologize because it wasn't digitized, but this is Avos Rav Nosson. I'll paraphrase for you. Yitzchak says, it's on that second underline, Abba Al Tisyare. Unbelievable. He's looking at Avram, he's saying, Abba, don't be scared. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine your child looking up at you before surgery? Not before you have to perform this deed and saying, Abba, don't worry, I'm fine. I'm worried about you. I'm a loving son. Could you imagine he's about to die and his last breathing moment is, I'm worried about you, Abba. This can't be easy for you. Don't worry. Don't be afraid. I'm giving confidence to you. What a touching scene. A little bit later, again, I'm going to flip back and forth in Midrashim. Source number 5. Third line. Remember, in this Midrash I just read, Yitzchak's worried about Avraham's mental, psychological state. Line number 5, source 5, line number 3, Abba, ma tasu l'ziknusechem. Who's going to feed you? Who's going to help you to the doctor? Who's going to drive you to the grocery store? I'm your only child. You and Ima, you're elderly people. Unbelievable. You're like sitting there figuring out Abram's pension plan a decade. I'm worried your stocks are a little low. You realize the S&P is a little low. Your pension fund, your 401, you depleted a little bit. What an amazing, amazing attempt to create a human being who, though forced to, I'm just running out of time, forced to succumb to the divine will, they're not just lost in the hallucinations or the passion of divine performance. But they're still dispensing their human responsibilities and their human emotions, and they're still celebrating the human relationships, even though they're about to end. And Avram says back, don't worry. We're older already. You and my mother, we'll take care of ourselves. Hashem will help us. Don't you see what Chazal is doing here? They're defending their humanity, even though in the end the humanity is going to be submitted to divine will. That doesn't mean life isn't unidimensional. Life is multidimensional. You still act as a human being. You still effuse your human emotions. Even though that decision has to be absolute and unchangeable. And then, amazingly, Avram's not just worried. Yitzchak's not just worried about Avram. He's worried about Sarah, who's not even there. So in that blackened part that I can't really read, you can try to look. He says, Abba, I'm paraphrasing almost word for word. When you go back and tell Ima, make sure you don't tell her suddenly. Make sure she's not on a roof, because she may fall out of panic. Make sure she's not near a well, because she may jump in out of grief. Make sure she's not holding a knife, because she may harm herself. Just let that scene settle into your mind for a moment. A child is about to lose his life in some holy mission, which is important, and his last thoughts are about his father, who's there to give him confidence and to worry about his future, and more importantly, about the mother, who's not there. In some ways, he's going to have a harder time, and does have a harder time, according to Chazal. And then in the next medrash, these are all the medrashim that Rav Amital would quote us. By and large, you talk about the Akedah every year on Rosh Hashanah, on the second day when we read. It's a compilation of all the sichot he would give us. Again, this is going to sound strident to you, but don't be anachronistic. For us, it has certain connotations, but in their terms, it would be very touching and sensitive. Source number 5. Yitzchak says, Abba, shecht me, burn my body, and take my ashes and bring them to Ima. And anytime Ima misses me, let her look at my ashes. And again, for us, it carries very, very negative connotations. But Yitzchak's worry that Sarah should have portraits of him, let's say, in our context. Something to hold on to, or psychological anger. Again, don't get caught in the details. Details change from culture to culture and period to period. We have negative associations with cremation and ashes, and we put the ashes on the mantle. Forget pictures, memories, whatever, memory book. That was a memory book. So all Yitzchak can worry about is, how will Ima survive my absence? Tell her in the right way. Break the news to her easily. This is the theme. Chazal are trying to humanize these people, not objectify them. Even though the solution is clear, these are humans who are still bringing human feelings, legitimate, purifying. And most amazingly, here is the big reveal. Tanios used to be very, very extensive experiences, far more than our shadow Tanios. Our shadow Tanios, like Shiva Asa, they're all Zecher LaTanios. We start in the morning, we eat at night, we work. You know what a real Tanis Sibur is? You start fasting at night when there's a famine, or no rainfall, or a war, or other crisis. You fast from night. You bring the Aron HaKodesh into the center of the city, and everyone davens together. You put ashes on the leader's forehead. No one works. Serious. And you inflate Shemona Esrei from 18 or 19 to 24, 25. You add 6 extra brachos. The remnant of those 6 brachos you say at the end of Slichos. Remember Mishana? Mishana from Avina Bahar Maria, Hu Yaneinu. Mishana Liako Bebeisel, Hu Yaneinu. Mishana Levasein Ol Yamsef, Hu Yaneinu. Take a look, you'll see this. Source number 7. The first bracha you add to Shimon Esrei on Atanas is Mishanas Avram Avina Bahar Maria, Hu Yanes Chem. Just like you answer to Avram's Tefillah in Har Maria, please answer our Tefillah. Vishma Bekol Tzakas Chem, Hayom Hazeh. Baruch Hata Hashem, Goel Yisrael. An actual bracha. You change Shemon Esrei. Wait a second. When and where did Avram daven in Har HaMoriah? We have no record of this. Yaakov daven at Beisel, Vayifka B'makom. Am Yisrael daven at the Yamsu, Vayitzaku El Hashem. Moshe daven in Chorev, Hashem Hashem, Kiel Rachum Lechanon. Mesnap Alef Hashem, Vayichal Moshe. Where did Avram daven in Har HaMoriah? So the classic answer is Yerushalmi. The classic answer is that after the Akedah, after Avraham passed the test, please listen, this is the core of today's shiur. It's a very, very deep concept. I really want you to engage in it. Avraham davens to Hashem, based on Yerushalmi and Tainis, source number 8. Hashem, I suppressed my love to fulfill your will. Kavashti es rachamim mi ben yechidi lasos ritzoncha. Now it's your turn, Hashem. Anytime my children need you, please suppress your anger and allow your rachamim to flow. I suppress my love for your will, now you suppress your anger with your rachamim. And those of you who say korbanos every day, there's a section in the Akedah which you repeat, and you have this little bracha from the Yishami. Kemoshe kavash avar vinos rachamav liben yechidu v'ratza l'shchot oso kein tich v'shir rachamecha es kascha me'aleinu v'ya gola rachamecha midosecha. Please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm asking you to do the Avram thing. Avram suppressed, you suppress your anger. So according to the Yishalmi, Avram's tefillah is post-Akedah. He succeeds brilliantly, flying colors. Hashem, Avram turns to Hashem and says, now that I've succeeded, I want you to be capable. I'm asking you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be capable. I'm praying to you. But that's not the Medrash Rav Amital quoted to us. That's the Yishalmi. Rav Amital quoted this Medrash. This is an amazing Medrash. You're not going to understand it unless you listen for 5 minutes. You're not going to wrap your head around it immediately. So get ready to listen and engage. The Medrash says, I'll read it with you together. Source number 5. They're now up at the Akedah. Yitzchak has expressed his worry. Source 5. 3 lines from the bottom. Be'osa shah. This is the moment. This is right here. We're focusing on the specific instant, the second of the Akedah. Avram is about to pull the trigger, pull the knife. Be'osa shah. Par piv bivachir. He starts screaming. He starts shrieking. Vega gaya gedola. Screaming at the top of his lungs. He looks to Shamayim. Herim kolo, he shouts. Esa enai el harim. Remember, if you're standing in Har Moriah, you're surrounded by mountains. He looks around at all the mountains. Me'ayin yavo Ezri. Ezri me'im Hashem. Osei Shamayim varetz, help me Hashem. Avraham is davening against the Akedah. He's asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, cancel it, rescind it. It's not just inner turmoil. To the last second, he's fighting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not halting his decision, but pleading with Rabboni Shalom, halt it. It doesn't make sense. Why? It's an amazing concept. History, Akedah, Am Yisrael. Religious consciousness here in Shemayim. But I can't. He davens and he davens and he davens. And here's the next point. Get this. And there's a narrative that says that his tefillah cancels the Akedah, which is why we invoke his tefillah as the paradigmatic tefillah. Of course his tefillah didn't cancel the Akedah, because Hashem never intended the Akedah. That's the whole point. To disavow human sacrifice, Hashem has to bring the founder of monotheism to the brink of human sacrifice to say, that's not what I want. This is exactly what I don't want. You see this? He's the founder. You're at the brink. I don't want that. I don't want human sacrifice. I don't want that. That's what the Akedah is. It's a setup. You have to set someone up for human sacrifice. Everyone believes that the core of religion. I don't want it. So of course, the Akedah was never meant to happen. But there's another story here, because we invoke Avram's tefillah. Just like you answered Avram's tefillah, answer my tefillah. So there is a storyline to the Akedah. Of course, there's 2 storylines factually contradict, but there's a storyline that says Hashem wants the Akedah, and Avram cancels it. There's a storyline in which human beings defeat Hashem, which human beings basically rescind the Akedah because it's immoral. Well, they're also performing the Akedah. Because, of course, you have to be willing to submit your will to Hashem. You know what it's like, guys? It's like taking a black and white movie and coloring. You know when they take those old black and white movies and... That's what Rami Tal did to the Akedah. You think it's black and white. All of a sudden you realize that life is never black and white. And certainly when you're engaged in serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because of that offset between human will and human capacity, and the unknowable will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to summarize it all, I mean, probably the most famous, but this is such a great encapsulation. One phrase. Avram is standing, source number 4. Such a beautiful phrase. Literally. The hand is grasping the knife. Einav maridos d'ma'os v'naflos d'ma'os le'inav shel Yitzchak. He's crying directly into Yitzchak's eyes. Merachmanusa shel Abba. Because he's a loving father who's just terrified and traumatized by this. The Aval Pekin Halev Sameach Lazos with Son Yotzro. And he's thrilled. How can you cry and be thrilled at the same time? That's the hero we see. That's why your heart is multi-chambered, because you are called upon in life and you're called upon in Avodas Hashem to feel multiple emotions at once. That's the takeaway. Let me give you an example. No one should follow this at home, but just as a concept. Remember, Bava Basra says, if your rich uncle passes away, you have to make 2 brachas. Dayan HaMes, because you're grieving. And the next bracha you make is the Shechianu, because you're wealthy now. How could you not thank HaKadosh Baruch? Hashem delivers wealth to you. How could you be so ungrateful? Okay, so I wouldn't make the 2 brachas together. That's just a mind experiment.
I remember when Rav Moshe got married, Rav Aaron was an avil. Rav Aaron was a super machmir. And he was super machmir about avilus because he thought people trivialized it and diminished it and diluted it. But he wanted to be at Rav Moshe's wedding. So he went to Rav Shlomo Zalman asking for a kula. Sounds like a joke, right? And Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't give him a kula. Rav Aaron told me that after the wedding, he's more attuned to the love he felt for his son that night, having not expressed it, than he would have been having if he had expressed it. So you don't express something, doesn't mean you don't feel it. One day, Mitzrayim, you'll be married. There'll be a lot of love in you, sometimes you don't express. Halachos. Doesn't mean you don't feel it. It means you don't express it, you don't act upon it. But fatherly love. This is human morality. You can't express it, because the Kodesh Baruch Hu issues an unrescindable command. But you daven and you struggle and you cry and that's the complexity of Avodas Hashem, of twinning humanism. And obviously these are polar extreme cases where the two clash. They clash in so few cases. Much of the synchronicity we understand, sometimes you don't understand, and sometimes they're, although they're not meant to be synchronicity. It's not meant to be synchronicity with Amalek. It can't, you can't. Synchronized genocide with them. And these are test cases, but when you do them, you're still fusing as a human being, you're davening, you're rescinding, you're... So that's just one chapter, one installment. I hope to do three of these. Of how Rav Amital tried to humanize our religion. How to take this religion, which was so transcendent and so ascendant, trying to find our Kodesh Baruch Hu, trying to be more than ourselves, submit human will. But Hashem made us basar v'dam. We're not malachim. What does that mean? It's just a blockade that we should overcome. It's an extra challenge. Really should be a malach. But Hashem wants it to get more schar, so it creates human morality and physicality and a temporal world and fatigue and sleep and needs. Just so that you should be even a greater hero. Kachnas, binchas, yichidchas, shirhafta. Just to up the ante, so you can just cross it. Or no, this is part of your avodas Hashem. And of course, the real takeaway is, guys, this is the real takeaway, which I'll talk about next time we meet. Maybe I think next time. I think all we're going to do is, okay. So we had the Akeda. I put the Akeda in one small marginal point. Okay, now, what role does my human feelings have in my avodas Hashem when they are synchronous? How can it affect my avodas Hashem? When I'm standing and there's no clash. So should I express myself purely ritually and halachically and prayer? How can I tap who I am as a human? And let that infuse my avodas Hashem. How can I take all this humanity? Say, I've never been to yeshiva. Say, I'm not Jewish. Let's say, I never received divine command or revelation. I'm just a good, noble, pure, upright person with inner conscience and integrity. What does that mean? Is the Torah the total sweep of human morality? In base, I should look in the Torah, and this is just the platform. 2,448 years, man developed morality, but then Hashem came and developed such a imposing system that like dwarfs it and eliminates it, and not just look in the Torah and look at its mitzvahs and that's, and anything else is just peripheral. Or, and why, how can I take who I am as a human being? Because if my humanity can survive the Akedah and have a role at the Akedah when they clash, it can certainly have a role when they don't clash, right? There's the Kal Vachomer. My humanity has a role at HaMoriah, then Kal Vachomer should have a role in everything else in which you don't have direct confrontation. What's that role? How do we define it? Okay, so I'll wait for next time. Okay? Shkach, we'll end here. Take a few minutes. Ellie will start in 5 minutes. Okay? Shkach.